Welcome to Swine Time Podcast here at Pipestone. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Wayne. I'm glad you're with us again. Today we have a couple guests. One would be a person that works here with us at Pipestone. Her name is Amber Pugh. And Amber Pugh is one of our procurement specialists. I've known her for a little bit. I don't know her very well, so it'd be interesting for having her introduce herself a little. And then we have a special guest from the outside. The outside person is Gordon Denny. Gordon Denny is a soybean industry professional, I guess I'd call it, and that's how he has to be introduced. He's done a lot of things. I think he knows a lot, and I'm here to hear what he has to share. So from here on, I will turn it over to Amber and Denny.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Wayne. Excited to be on this podcast today and really talk about something that's really pertinent right now to our industry, and that's this perceived soybean meal shortage. And so I'll just give you a little bit of my background, and then I'll kick it over to Gordon so he can tell a little bit about his background. But I've been in procurement really for about 17 years. I started with Smithfield Foods, pretty much do everything but corn and soybean meal. And so I'm the director of procurement for Pipestone Nutrition, our nutrition group, and I lead up our feed partners, which really deals with everything but corn and soybean meal. So that is why we need Gordon on here to kind of give more insight onto what's going on in the marketplace. But I've been with Pipestone Nutrition for about 4 years now, and we have a great nutrition team with, five or six nutritionists on staff. And so very much involved with, the end users and our shareholders in Pipestone. So Gordon, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and give a little bit about your background, and then we'll jump into some questions.
Okay, great. Thank you, Amber. My name is Gordon Denny. I'm originally a backwoods Southern Indiana hillbilly farm kid. I think part of my tinnitus is from trying to take care of young male pigs. So anyway, I spent about 28 years with a company called Bunge, where I spent half my career as a procurement manager buying soybeans and trading commodities, and the other half as a soybean processing plant manager. I retired 10, 11 years ago, and since then I've been consulting for the United Soybean Board, U.S. Export Council, and others in the industry. I primarily like to work for soybean farmers and soy checkoff. Other than 5 years in the Marine Corps as an infantry officer, soybeans are about all I've ever done in my life. I got 40 plus years experience directly in the industry.
Good. Well, thank you. Thank you, Gordon, for that introduction. So what we'll do here is we'll just jump into some of basic questions just about soybean meal, and then we'll kind of get into some of the more hot topics that are happening right now. So if you could just give us a little bit of understanding of what species in the United States is the biggest soybean meal user, and where does swine rank? You know, because again, we're in the swine industry, and we're worried about what's happening right now for the swine industry.
Absolutely. The first thing I want to mention too, I have no tact discretion. I'm not political. I've got no agenda. I'm just going to give you what I honestly actually think. So pork is hugely important to domestic and international soybean meal consumption. Something with a feather, meaning a broiler, a layer, or a turkey, consumes about two-thirds of the soybean meal produced in the United States on an annual basis. Swine is a close second behind that, so probably it varies a little year to year, 23 to maybe 25 or 26% of domestic soybean meal production is consumed by pork. Obviously there are a few more choices maybe that pork folks have that maybe a broiler doesn't have. Also, about half the soybeans grown annually in the United States end up being domestically processed into meal. The other half is exported.
Okay, thank you. So when we talk about soybean meal, is the protein, you know, we've seen just different genetics happening over the course of the last 15, 20 years. Really, we're honing in on how the pig utilizes soybean meal. Is protein going down? And if so, why is that? Or what's happening just with soybean meal or soybeans in general?
I hope folks from the United Soybean Board aren't listening in, because what I'm going to say is they may not like, and the seed tech companies certainly won't like. We have the lowest crude protein from the soybean crop this year since we've been keeping records. And that has shown, I wouldn't call it a precipitous, I just call it a gradual steady decline in the crude protein levels of U.S. soybeans over the last 30 years. I think we're probably at the bottom in all sincerity, and I think it's a combination of the growing conditions. Primarily, it's a result of seed technology and what the Cortivas and the Bayer, those folks have been promoting, which is how the farmer gets paid, which is on bushels. Those bushels have become less nutrient and physically dense. They're higher probably in oligosaccharides than we would like, a little lower in protein and essential digestible amino acids. The oil, the fat content has remained fairly steady, fairly constant. So we got more bushels. We've got steady oil, but we certainly have seen lower protein. And again, a gradual, steady decline over the last 30 years. And I think that's probably because not only the priorities of breeding, Roundup Ready didn't probably help the genetic focus. And again, the farmers get paid on bushels and not on the quality at this stage. We're working on that. That's a huge opportunity.
So along those lines, what should producers, swine producers, be testing for? I mean, we should be testing for crude protein, calcium. What are those things that we need to be watching? You know, because we talked, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Gordon, about, we should be claiming on soybean meal, and many people don't. We don't think about it. We just think that, you know, it comes into the mill and it is what it is, and that's what we, you know, but what should we be really looking at when it comes to soybean meal?
Okay, since I've made the seed companies and the USB upset, I'm going to now make the processors upset. So if you're buying soybean meal in a large way, and I'm pretty sure you are, you definitely should consider claiming if you feel like the quality of your meal is not meeting the trade specifications of your purchase. And that's typically protein, moisture, and fiber. So if you're not claiming, two things happen. One, you're not receiving a claim benefit from substandard meal. And number two, you might be the recipient of the less quality meal that's coming out of that particular location. If I were a buyer of meal, and it depends on your formulations and the nutritional requirements of the animal that you're feeding and what stage of animal, the essential digestible amino acids are pretty critical. At least I know with the nutritionists I work with on the broiler side. Energy, the amount of residual fat in the meal. So you want higher fat. Although it competes with the protein and everything else for space in that soybean. So moisture, the finished moisture of that meal, they guarantee a 12% level. A processor can ship you up to 12.5% moisture without a claim. At 12.6% moisture, you should file a claim. You don't want to pay for water when you're wanting to buy protein and energy. So if I had to prioritize it based on what I know about a lot of formulas, I would say the amount of residual fat in the meal, the oil, the crude protein, because that's the trade standard. Unfortunately, amino acid profile is not a trade standard. We'd like to see it introduced. So crude protein and then the residual moisture. If you buy meal at 10%, it's a great advantage for you.
So based on that, when we talk about domestic soybean meal, you know, this is such a global market anymore, and we do know that soybean meal comes in and soybeans come in from other countries. What across the continent, can you talk about a little bit of differences in what could be coming in that maybe you don't know about into your feed mill or into your rations from other countries?
Yeah, this year, exceptional demand driven primarily by exports to China. Both on the pork side of the market, which is a great thing for Pipestone and everyone else, but it's also they're taking a very high percentage of the U.S. soybean production. So because of that, we have the lowest soybean stocks to use ratio ever. It's the second lowest carryout from one crop year to the next. 120 million bushels at the end of the crop year out of about a 4.5 billion crop. So that is below what I would consider pipeline supplies, meaning that, and the crush capacity in the U.S. continues to go up. there's about a 7 million bushel a day crush capacity in the United States. No plant runs at highest rate all the time. So let's say we're running at 94%. So we'll crush about 6.5 million bushels of soybeans a day in the United States. We will import more beans and more meal this year than probably previous years. Last USDA report, I think, says 600,000 tons of foreign meal. Some of that is coming in around the clock because of Indian organic or non-GMO meal, whether it is or isn't, I don't know, but they sell it as organic for folks that want to have a particular label, primarily, I think, on a broiler that says organic or non-GMO fed. But I'm hearing more and more likely now that folks in the Southeast that can bring meal up through Norfolk, the Gulf, wherever, may have already looked at purchasing meal from Brazil or Argentina. Brazil is the biggest bean exporter in the world. Argentina is the biggest soybean meal exporter in the world. Brazil beans and meal are typically a little higher in protein than the U.S. Argentina is typically lower in protein than the U.S. And the other thing I wanted to mention in your previous question, a big consideration for buying soybean meal and the individual plants are the consistency of the product and realizing you have to formulate around standard deviations. A primary consideration is the toasting or the urease activity and whether or not you look at TIUs or TIAs. The toasting will allow, the better, the more accurately meal is toasted, the palatability, the digestibility, your feed conversion will improve. So in addition to your earlier question, the residual fat, the crude protein, the moisture, but then the consistency or that narrowing the range of the variability would be a real key component in proving that the meal is valuable.
So Gordon, many of our producers not only raise pigs, but they also raise row crops. And so is there any, many of our groups have on-farm mills, you know, so they not only use their soybean meal or, you know, they get their soybean meal back or they use it within their rations. So is there any line of genetics that better suits, swine or poultry producers? Is there any better genetics that you know of?
Yes. And again, as I mentioned previously, I do think that we could be at the very bottom of soybean quality in the U.S. I think we finally that Bayer and Corteva and these others realize that price plus quality equals value, and the quality has diminished, so therefore the value has diminished. Even though the prices are high, that's a supply and demand situation. So the quality and the value of that bean is a question that the seed guys, when you're buying seed, particularly if you're feeding full fat meal or some sort of a high fat ration through an expeller, I would ask the seed providers, okay, I need this particular package, this genomic package for my area, because I've got whatever seed condition that I need to have the genomic package to fix. So protein, higher the protein, the higher the value. The oil is pretty well a standard. I wouldn't think too much about a high oil bean because I think that's fairly well been fixed. But the higher the protein, the higher the quality, the higher the value, the better the feed conversion ratios.
Okay, good. Thank you. So we're going to switch gears a little bit and get more into the pricing aspect of it. And you know, the reason why we're having this podcast is really because we've been getting a lot of calls on this perceived soybean meal shortage coming up this summer. And so can you tell us how we, I know you touched on it a little bit, but how did we get into this situation?
Again, we didn't have a record crop last year, but we had a good crop. And China has been buying everything. We had the trade war, so that put them back. They had African swine flu virus. That hurt them. So they're building stocks on everything from soybeans, soybean meal, pork, copper, you name it. We're in a commodity super cycle that is reflected obviously in soybean meal, soybean oil prices, but lots of other commodities as well. The dollar strength or lack thereof has an impact on that as well. So the weaker dollar, the stronger commodity prices. We are going to import beans and meal, as I mentioned. China is, they buy about, I think, 68% of the beans that we export out of the U.S. end up going to China. They don't want to buy soybean meal from us because they have their own plants. They need both the oil and the meal, so they want the raw beans. So when they flip-flop on about a seasonal basis to go to Brazil, and right now that's where they're trying to transition, but Brazil harvest is very slow. Their beans are wet, they're warm, they're slow, they're stored in bags on the ground, but they're higher in protein. So the market will factor a little bit of all that into an equation, but there's ships lined up waiting for Brazil beans. The amount of beans being exported out of the U.S. is going to drop precipitously, but the delayed harvest is causing more people, including China, to come to the U.S. longer than we might have guessed. It's helped the prices. It's helped the farm level, but I do think that we will see geographic shortages of soybean meal and the availability. You've seen it probably that processors maybe aren't overly willing to offer meal out in May, June, July. I think most processors are about bought out on their current bean stocks for crush, 30, 45, maybe some have 60 days of crush. I'm hearing some really high numbers being paid for soybeans. So there is the concern that with this 120 million bushel carry out, the lowest stocks to use ratio ever, the increased crush capacity, we've got new plants in the U.S. that have been built in the last 2 or 3 years, and we've got higher crush rates than ever before. So it does look like that we will have some sporadic geographic shortages of meal in the U.S. June, July, August.
So basis levels are really a great indicator of, you know, regional rationing. So what regions of the country do you see that happening? I mean, Midwest, South, I mean, what's your kind of overall feel for just the U.S. market on supply and shortage area?
As I think the U.S. has become kind of one, not homogenous, but certainly the market is kind of moderated to the point or mitigated to the point where that basis reflections in one area and supply and demand in one area is pretty similar to other areas. I don't know, and I don't trade it right now, if there's a huge basis differential other than transportation considerations and the original cost of beans. You have beans in the Dakotas or Minnesota that might be 30, 40, 50 cents a bushel cheaper than beans in southern Illinois or down in the southeast, for example. And I did a crush margin sheet the other day in a calculation. I used three different areas. I used the north, the Midwest, and the South, and the margins came out about the same in terms of the gross processing margin that a processor makes, even though there was significant difference in the bean price and the meal price. Oil's pretty steady. So to answer that, I think logistics, as a buyer, which if I'm buying meal for a processing or for a feeder, logistics has always got to be number one. You got to have X number of cars or X number of trucks. Quality considerations comes in second, and under the quality, then again, energy, crude protein, moisture, and consistency. But logistics is the number one, and rail, kind of expensive, kind of, I know they had some reliability and transportation issues because of weather recently, but I guess I would buy sooner than later. I would try and get commitments from the processors sooner than later. And I would also, and again, I hate to say this, I would consider substitutes where necessary, and whether that's canola meal, DDG, synthetics, additional corn and ration. Again, every fiber of my soybean bean tells me that that's, I hate to say that, but I certainly don't want to see hungry hogs or placed on maintenance diets with real high hulls inclusion. And
yeah. So I'm going to ask kind of some pointed questions in your opinion. So how realistic is this, summer going to be with, I mean, are we going to run out of soybean meal or how will the market adjust? I mean, is that even a realistic thing? Because, you know, at Pipestone Nutrition right now, we're we're heavily looking at just kind of all the things that you just talked about. We're looking at what other alternatives to protein can we use, whether it's field peas or canola or sunflower meat bone, you know, those things. We're also, you know, running some trials, just actually started yesterday, on looking at the different levels of soybean meal, maybe lowering it in the diets, or how high we can take synthetics. And so we're doing all those things, but to have a, you know, a game plan, if it would, but how realistic is it really?
You got a tough job, Amber. I would not want your job this for the next 6 months for anything. You couldn't pay me enough, because I think you are going to have to juggle a lot of unusual things logistically, commodity-wise, delivery-wise. It's just going to be frustrating. Buy an extra case of wine to just have that in reserves and ready. Don't want to run out of that. But on top of all that, I understand that we've had a synthetic amino acid supply availability and pricing situation because of the Long Beach LA container delays, which part of that's COVID. Part of that is lazy Americans like me sitting at home buying Amazon stuff that we've had. We continue to have a record trade deficits with China, regardless of any trade agreements or the amount of stuff they're importing from us. So the methionine and all those issues, I don't know how that compounds or creates additional problems. I think it is a real problem. I kind of mentioned this 2 and 3 months ago, that if our carryout, for the last 3 years in a row, we have crushed into our carryout, our crush and export levels of U.S. soybeans. We had 900 million bushels of carryout a couple of years ago. So now we're down to 120 million bushels. 900 is comfortable. The markets are, prices were low. We are having inverted markets now in beans, meal, and soybean oil. And by inverted, the price nearby is higher than the deferred price. But even though a processor can sell good margin soybean meal today, he has beans to crush today, some of them are storing meal to sell later this summer, which is a good thing for the supply, because they think they'll be able to capture enough future carry in the basis appreciation because their supplies will be tight. I would be doing the same thing were I there today. I'd also be buying all the beans I could before the farmers go to the field, because I think once the planting hits, the timing is going to be about right where the current soybean supplies that the existing processors have today is going to be running out. So I would think by about April, May, we could see some pretty volatile markets in the U.S. on beans and meal. I think the delivery game in Chicago could be played a little bit more than typical. There's 175 meal tickets out on the street in Incabrasa that's owned partly by Cargill and ADM. So I think they're setting on those as an insurance policy in case the crush rates come down, and that they can't buy enough meal in the marketplace to meet some of their demand. So, it's, again, like I say, you got a bad job coming up for the next few months.
Maybe I should ask for a raise, right? Okay, that's great insight, Gordon. I really appreciate it. And just really one last question, and you know, if you were a swine producer in Iowa, and you know your grain bins are full of beans, and you know you have your own on-farm mill, do you hold on to those and maybe take them to the crusher this summer to get your soybean meal back? Do you sell some? What do you do? What's your recommendation?
Well, if you've got beans still unsold on the farm, good for you. And I'm glad to see $14 CME prices. You're way ahead of the vast majority of other folks. And if you've got an expeller operation that you can feed, or that's part of this on-farm mill that you're talking about, there's probably 25 to 30 million bushels a year that potentially unaccounted for in all the USDA WASD reports and the FAS studies and things of that nature. So there's a chance that we might end up with a little less than 120, but not much less. February, we didn't crush hard because of the weather. There were natural gas issues, logistical issues, breakdowns, people throttle their plants back during extremely cold weather, because if you break down there, you're down for days at least. So maybe the lost crush in February will carry forward into March, April, and May. If I'm a farmer, I've got bins full of beans. First thing I'm going to do is pat myself on the back and take my spouse to dinner. I do think that there is a great potential to have some explosive, you know, broiler egg sets and chick placements are probably down 1 to 2, maybe as much as 3% from a year ago, the same week. So, but they were on a pretty strong high record demand pace for broilers, the number one consumer of soybean meal in the United States. Swine numbers are pretty good, and export situation. I look at cold storage on pork. Makes me want to go to Costco and stock up right now because there's not a lot left. China keeps buying. So the chance for explosive markets, could we see $15 beans and, you know, another $100 on top of the existing soybean meal prices? Yeah. We could mitigate that by reducing some of this nearby demand and people deciding that they're maybe not going to put on extra numbers of livestock or go to market early. But I just, again, I kind of think that the guy with bin full of beans is going to be valuable. I don't think we got beans in $20 level, but could we see, I was saying beans in the teens back in December. And now that we're closer to 14 than anything, you know, we got another dollar in there. Yeah, boy. I hear some levels that, it's 50 over the futures month that were traded recently into a processing plant. So 50 cents on a basis over the futures month. So some of the processors are willing to pay $14.50 to $14.60 a bushel now for beans to make sure they've got a supply. They're nervous as well.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's really great information. And I'm sure, you know, there'll be follow-up questions probably after this podcast, and our producers will be probably calling us. So I'll probably be in touch with you to talk more about this. And let's hope pig prices stay high and we can not run out of soybean meal. But I, you know, really appreciate your time today, Gordon. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Amber.
Yeah. Hey, this is Spencer. I'll just wrap it up here. Gordon, thank you. I appreciate it. Amber, I appreciate you being on to host this portion and to ask good questions. Phil? I guess I'll wrap it up there. Thank you to our guests, and I want to say thanks to our listeners, and tune in next time for whatever we got on the docket for Swine Time Podcast here at Pipestone. Thank you.
Swine Time Podcast was created for the pork industry and individual pork producers around the country. Hosted by Dr. Spencer Wayne with the Pipestone Veterinary Services, the podcast contains pork industry news, advancements in animal care, and how to enhance your productivity. Monthly podcasts are available on Spotify, Google Music, iTunes, Anchor, and on www.pipestone.com.